Welcome to this emergency weekend edition of Brighteon Broadcast News for Sunday, October 8th, 2023. As you are well aware, yesterday, Israel was attacked by a Hamas terror front that took hostages, that killed dozens of Israelis, that also broke through defenses and even used paragliders and drones dropping explosives on targets. And then Israel responded with its own counterattacks against Hamas, in particular in the Gaza area and some other areas. This is escalating quite rapidly, but there are some ramifications here that we have to cover that you need to know, even as an American, because some of what just happened in Israel is also very likely to happen in similar ways in the United States, and I'll talk about that here in a second. I've also recorded another smaller podcast on this, but there are additional developments since then. So this is the official broadcast for today. Now, I want to be clear on the record here that I condemn these terrorist attacks. I condemn these acts of violence against Israel and the what looks like just the senseless killing of Israeli civilians. And there was a woman who was killed and paraded around. Her naked body was paraded around by Hamas. At least that's what it looks like from the videos. And this was just senseless violence that I absolutely condemn at every level. That said, what I'm about to offer here is going to be very controversial, not politically correct, because I'm going to explain how the nation of Israel is itself carrying out acts of extreme terrorism against the Israeli people, against Israeli civilians. So that's happening. And also I'm going to point out another major contradiction in the U.S. policies towards Israel versus Hamas or Fatah or Hezbollah, and how the U.S. is utterly failing to protect its own borders while demanding that we have to help Ukraine protect its borders and we have to help Israel protect its borders also. But U.S. borders are wide open. Nothing for America. So actually, let's start with that. So over the weekend, I received intelligence from one of my contacts who has, what's the right way to say this? Accurate knowledge about what's happening on the border, the southern border of Texas, and what's called the Fronten Island. This is an island in the middle of the Rio Grande River, and this island has been occupied by, well, Mexican drug cartels, essentially. And Texas Rangers, and including some people linked to people that I know, took back that island about a week ago. And it was an actual battle for United States territory in the United States. And a lot of people don't realize this. The mainstream media has not really talked about this, but I find it very interesting that the United States was occupied and invaded by Mexican drug cartels and human traffickers about 1 week before Hamas launched its attack on Israel and its invasion of Israel and the taking of Israeli civilians as hostages and the killing of Israeli civilians, by the way, door-to-door killing. So these two events, in my mind, are not unrelated. It's part of an overall attack on Western countries. Now, what's actually happening near Fronten, Texas, with the Fronten Island there, is that the cartels are fighting for control of smuggling into the United States because it's very easy to cross the river there, the Rio Grande there, where that island is, because the island is kind of, the river channel is narrow, and that island is a staging area inside the United States that the Mexican cartels are able to gain access to easily because, well, at least as I understand it, currently the river, I mean, it's not even really an island because the river isn't high enough. So the reason that Fronten Island is so valuable is because once the Mexican drug cartels make it to the island, then they have easy, super easy access and smuggling routes because the island is in the United States territory. So from Mexico, they cross the Rio Grande River. They get to the island, and the Mexican drug cartels are fighting over control of this island because once they're there, they can get to Fronten and they can get to Rhodes and they can, you know, move north for human trafficking, weapons trafficking, drug trafficking, and all of that. Now, there are essentially two cartels that are fighting for control over Fronten Island, or that were. They were cleaned out by Texas Rangers in just the last week, like I said earlier. And as I was told, that there were mostly gun battles across the river. So, in other words, from the Mexican side, which is the south side of the river, the Mexican drug cartels are shooting across the river, which isn't very wide, into Texas Rangers, or they're trying to take out Texas Rangers that are on the island. And then I'm told, scouts have been watching us from across the river, and the Mexican military is patrolling. So this is important to understand. Even though this invasion of the United States is not a state-sponsored invasion per se, the Mexican military, as you know, is completely controlled by the drug cartels. And the two cartels that are actively working on Fronten Island and that, you know, recently occupied it are Cartel de Noreste, known as the CDN, and Cartel Jalisco Nueva Generacion, which is CNG, typically, is what that's called. So in one way, you could think about these cartels as kind of like Hamas. The way Hamas is to Israel, these two cartels are to the United States. But I'm not saying that these cartels are, you know, Islam, or that they share the same, you know, religious zealotry of Hamas, but rather that they feel like this territory is theirs, that South Texas, they think, belongs to the Mexican people, because, of course, it used to be Mexico, all of it, including Fronten Island, and including, by the way, where I live in Central Texas used to be Mexico. And so there's a kind of, it's a non-religious zealotry, but it's a cultural zealotry to take back Texas for the Mexican people, and until then, to exploit these routes for profit, power, and control, mostly through human trafficking and drug trafficking. Now, this occupation of Fronten Island is also part of a probing maneuver by the Mexican drug cartels, CNG in particular, which is the larger cartel, in order to determine the seriousness of the response from the American side. And so this is what's interesting. So Texas Rangers actually ran this battle. Texas Rangers had to wage a full assault, a military-style assault on Fronten Island. And in fact, let me bring up some of the photos of our boys, our Texas Rangers. Looking at them right now with the Texas flag, AR-15s, ACOG sights, some pretty beat up steel mags, by the way. Let's see, chest rigs, extra magazines on the chest. No helmets. Oh, here's first aid shears. We got a medic. I'm looking at one of the photos. I don't know if I can share this photo with you, so I'm just describing it. What is that? Mobile device in a front pocket. Okay. Just trying to see what else I can determine here. So they're not geared up as military. That's key to understand. These are Texas Rangers, comms, carabiners, but not helmets. And it definitely ballistic plates on the front. Let's see, on the back, is that a ballistic plate? Yeah, looks like a ballistic plate and a water carrier on the back. There's a tactical helmet that could be ballistic. All right, so I'm looking at a picture of several guys all wearing caps, except one guy who's facing away from the camera, obviously doesn't want to be seen, is wearing a standard Mitch military ballistic helmet. and he's facing away, so I can almost see his patch. I wonder if he's a military advisor to this group or what. But let me tell you, these guys mean business. These are some roughnecks in the military sense, if I've ever seen them. These guys are going to get the job done. Wow. I'm proud to have these guys as Texans, let me tell you. And one of them's even running a suppressor and a variable magnification optic, which could be a Trigicon. Oh, and here's something good. Man, I wish I could show you this photo. Here's a guy. He's got an arm brace, short barreled AR with an arm brace and a suppressor, looks like it. But he's running an arm brace. I can see it. It's an SB tactical arm brace, which means all these Texas Rangers are giving the finger to the ATF, which we fully support, by the way. So, again, pretty capable teams, and they have done some serious fighting there on the island. All right, now a little bit more information in another photo I have. Looks like three of them are wearing police badges. I mean police text on their vest, right on the top of their chest. It says police, and one of them has a badge there that says medic. Yeah, three or four of them say police, and a lot of them are wearing boonies and headscarves too, which is kind of a good idea given the terrain. And I see another guy here who's obviously kitted out as a medic with all kinds of first aid gear as well. So anyway, look, bottom line, Texas realizes it's at war with the Mexican drug cartels, and I want to give a thumbs up to Governor Abbott and also Attorney General Ken Paxton and all the team leaders who are part of these boys that are down in South Texas doing, cleaning out this island. This is just the beginning of what's going to happen. As you know, there's going to be an activation day of cartels combined with terrorists from the Middle East who have been smuggled into the United States. Some from Palestine, but quite a few from Syria and Afghanistan. And they're already pre-positioned in the United States, and they are going to activate one day soon, which is going to make the current situation in Israel seem like a walk in the park in comparison to what's coming in the United States. We'll talk about that more in a minute. So anyway, okay, bottom line, the United States government does nothing to protect the U.S. borders. Understand that this battle on Fronten Island was done by the state of Texas, not by the federal government. And the media won't even talk about this. Most people have never even heard of this. This is an actual war for America taking place in Texas. But the U.S. military is not involved. I mean, they should be involved. It would certainly make the war a lot easier if they had some 155 rounds and some armored tracked vehicles as well, you know, instead of what they have now. But at the same time, the U.S. government is spending $115 billion to defend the border of Ukraine, or at least to attempt to defend it, unsuccessfully, I might add. And then also the United States is sending a lot of money to Israel in an effort to have Israel defend its borders. But I do want to mention also that the United States has been sending a lot of money to, well, Palestinian terrorists over the years. $6.3 billion since 1953, it turns out. Trump froze that foreign aid to the Palestinian groups, including the PLO, People's Liberation Army. But Joe Biden reversed that ban and began funding the PLO in April of 2021. So if you're wondering where's all this money coming from that's being used to fund these terrorist organizations and these rockets, these 5,000 rockets that were fired into Israel, it came from the Obama administration, and it's coming from the Biden administration. I'm even reading from Forbes here. In 2016, the last year of the Obama administration, the U.S. sent $359 million to Palestinians in so-called aid. And in 2014, it was $398 million. And Trump banned it. Trump said, we don't want U.S. taxpayer dollars going to fund the PLO. And then Biden reversed that, like I said. And so now this money is going to the Palestinians. And even though the PLO in particular is not, at least my understanding is the PLO is not claiming responsibility for these attacks. A lot of the money, it's all wishy-washy. It's gray zone, you know, gets laundered and moved around and gets into the hands of more radicalized groups that are trying to overrun and overtake Israel. And so don't forget, we have Hamas and we have Fatah. At least these are two primary groups. Hamas is Islamist group that is believed to be responsible for this current round of attacks. Fatah is more secular and has denounced violence, at least in years past. Fatah recognizes Israel, and Fatah tends to focus on, you know, negotiations, whereas Hamas is all about attacks and killing and bombing and terrorism, terror, you know, armed resistance, those kinds of things. And Hamas does not recognize the existence of Israel, by the way. Hamas believes that Palestine should be restored to the 1967 borders. So, disputes. Hamas defines itself as the, quote, Palestinian Islamic National Liberation and Resistance Movement. And it references Islam. It was founded, let's see, in Gaza in 1987 by Imam Sheikh Ahmed Yassin. And another person here, let's see. This was after the start of the first Palestinian uprising against what it calls Israel's occupation of the Palestinian territories. So the reason I mention all that, I want to bring to your mind here, let's look at the border situation in the United States and now this Hamas attack on Israel and also Russia and Ukraine. What do all these three things have in common? Claim of territory. So, of course, in Ukraine, Russia lays claim to Crimea many years ago, and then now the entire Donbass region. And Poland, by the way, historically lays claim to much of Western Ukraine. If that ever becomes an issue, it seems like there's more friction now between Poland and Ukraine. As I just mentioned, the Palestinians, or at least some of the groups in Palestine, believe that Israel is on Palestinian territory and that Israel has no right to exist. And then, of course, the Mexican drug cartels believe that most of Texas belongs to Mexico. So this is the common thread of all of these conflicts. And, of course, you get different religions thrown into this and geopolitics and money, i.e. control over resources, which is absolutely critical, for example, in Ukraine and the Crimea region. Well, Crimea is very, very wealthy in terms of natural gas. So the energy value of Crimea, the untapped energy that could make Russia very, very wealthy in the long run, is extraordinary. It's one of the largest discoveries of energy in the world, and that's why Russia will never give up Crimea, and it will fight to the very end if it has to in order to keep Crimea, which was, of course, all formerly part of the Soviet Union. Similarly, in the United States, the territory of Fronten Island and South Texas, or just the border territory in general, is extremely lucrative because it is a passageway to being able to distribute high-profit drugs, human trafficking, weapons trafficking, and even avocados, by the way, which I've laughed about a lot because I use so many. I eat lots and lots of avocados. It's part of my smoothie. I love avocados, and I know most of them come from Mexico, and the avocado orchards are controlled by the Mexican cartels, by the way. That's why avocados are so expensive. There's kind of a price-fixing monopoly, or cartel, you could say. An actual price cartel of avocados run by cartels. And they need distribution as well, though they don't have to cross the river. They can just put it on trucks and, you know, cross the border legally, except when, well, I'm not going to go there. There have been bans on avocado trafficking, believe it or not. And there have been people arrested in America involved in illegal avocado trafficking. I'm not even making that up. Okay, just in case you think I'm making that up, here it is. From usatoday.com. This was published in June of 2017. Avocado caper. Three California men charged in $300,000 theft of fruit. Arrested three men on charges of grand theft of fruit and vegetables, specifically the unauthorized sale of $300,000 worth of avocados. So avocados are transported from south of the border to Ventura County in California to a place called Mission Produce, and then they ripen there at Mission Produce, but some men were taking the avocados during the ripening phase and then selling them on their own, apparently up to $300,000. Again, an avocado caper. Now, in Israel, of course, it's more about territory than actual profits, and a lot of it's about Jerusalem and how, of course, the Islam considers Jerusalem to be its one of its most important holy cities. So all three, Jews, Christians, and followers of Islam all consider Jerusalem to be a holy city. Muslims have the Al-Aqsa Mosque, which is considered the third holiest site in Islam, and that is located in Jerusalem. And you may recall that Trump not only cut off funding for the Palestinians, or the PLO, People's Liberation Army, but Trump also moved the United States Embassy for Israel to where? Jerusalem. That event happened on May 14th, 2018, and it set off the world of Islam. I mean, now Israel, at least the Israeli government, loved that move because it showed that the United States under Trump further recognizes the importance of Jerusalem to the religion of Judaism, and showed the commitment to Israel to keeping Jerusalem accessible to Israel. Now, anytime you talk about Israel and Jerusalem and Islam and history, man, it gets complicated very quickly. And I'm not an expert in this region of the world. So I'm doing the best I can to try to understand it here, but it gets crazy complicated. But what I do want to point out is that the nation of Israel has largely shifted to become, over the last few decades, a more secular nation, just like the United States has, which means that both Israel and the United States, even though they are the two countries founded under Christian principles, both of these nations, Israel and the United States, have largely rejected God. Yeah, that's right. Israel is not a nation. I mean, some Americans think this. They think, like, every person in Israel is, conservative, religious Jew who goes to church every Sunday. No, not at all. Israel is mostly secular. Israel, the institutions of Israel have largely turned away from God, as have the institutions of the United States. And many religious observers believe that both the United States and Israel are being judged by God with the wrath of God in different ways, you know, crop failures and pestilence and so on, and war and financial collapse, all these things, the four horsemen of the apocalypse, because these two countries have rejected God and have embraced abortion. That's right. Abortion is part of understanding this. In the United States, since Roe versus Wade was, quote, legalized by the Supreme Court, I think that was 1971, then the United States became an abortion murder center for the world. And when that was overturned relatively recently by the Supreme Court, of course, all of the Democrat-run states scrambled to legalize child murder at the state level, whereas the red states chose to ban it, especially after, 20 weeks and so on. Heartbeat laws, things like that. So then you saw the bifurcation of the United States in terms of which states support baby murders and which states do not. So Israel, in the minds of many people, can no longer be considered a nation that is obedient to God, nor can the United States of America. And a horrifying example of this, and this is how Israel, its government and its institutions have committed acts of terrorism against the Israeli people that dwarf these actions by Hamas. What we saw during COVID was the Israeli government, the so-called science establishment, medical establishment, committing mass murder of Israeli citizens with the vaccine bioweapons, you see. And this is the part that I mentioned up front, is probably not going to be politically correct nor popular for anybody to hear. But as much as I condemn the Hamas attacks and I condemn the violence and just senseless violence and the assaults and kidnapping of innocent Israeli people, I have a duty to point out that the Israeli government has committed far larger crimes of medical violence against its own citizens for the past 3+ years, by the way. 3.5 years. That is a fact. And we now know, and we've seen this, you know, read the Substack articles from people like, you know, Steve Kirsch and Robert Malone and others, and you will find out that the Israeli government, they knew that the vaccine was unsafe. They knew it was going to maim and kill people, and they covered it up, and they administered the vaccine anyway. And there is no comparison in terms of the numbers of innocent Israeli people who have been maimed and killed, no comparison between what the Israeli government did itself versus what Hamas has just done over this weekend. The Israeli government has murdered easily 100,000 Israelis with the vaccine bioweapons. It might be several hundred thousand. I'd have to do the research and look at the numbers and see how many died and how many have been maimed. Probably over 1 million Israelis have been injured by these vaccines, if not several million. Now, understand, Hamas did not weaponize the vaccines. Hamas didn't launch vaccines at the Israeli people. The Israeli government did that. The Israeli scientists did that. The Israeli pharma giants did that against their own people. And no matter what you think about Hamas or Fatah or Hezbollah or the people of Lebanon or the people of Jordan or wherever, or the people in the Gaza, no matter what you think about them, they did not mass murder their own people with biological weapons disguised as vaccines. Isn't that interesting? Isn't that interesting? It's the West, Western nations in particular, that carried out mass murder, attempted genocide against their own people using the vaccines. The difference is that you don't see vaccine company CEOs murdering and parading around the naked bodies of women that they killed on TV, you know? Hamas does that, and so it's a very horrifying visual image that sticks in the minds of everybody and focuses the attention. But the vaccines kill people quietly in their own living rooms and bedrooms, in their sleep, or in hospitals, and there's nothing for the TV cameras to show. And the murderers who carry out these vaccine murders, they never have to touch their victims. There's no bloodshed. They don't have to use guns or rockets or drones or terrorism. They use injections. And then the bioweapons go to work and do what they were designed to do, which was to achieve mass death and depopulation. Israel did that as a nation against its own people, just as the United States did against its own people. Same with Canada, of course, Australia, New Zealand. I mean, you know, the United Kingdom. All the countries of the West did this. India didn't do this, by the way. Isn't that interesting? And most African nations did not do this either. Why are COVID death rates so low in African nations? when in some of those nations, the vaccine uptake rate was only 2%, just 2%. In Israel, it was something like, I'm guessing, 80 to 90%. So why didn't these African nations just suffer mass death? Okay, let me finish up that thought because I just got a photo coming in, a drone photo from one of my sources of one of the Mexican drug cartels near the border showing vehicles with turrets. So I'm going to show you this photo here in a minute and we'll analyze this photo. This is fascinating, man. Wow. Some heavily modified vehicles on the Mexican side. But just trying to wrap this up in terms of what's going on with Israel, I do want you to understand that the governments of Israel and the United States are, they've turned away from God. They are ruled by Satanists and globalists. And I don't mean just, for example, I'm not talking about Netanyahu per se, you know, in a personal manner. I'm saying that the establishment governments or the deep states of both Israel and the United States are beholden to Satan and the destruction of their own countries. They want to see their countries overrun and destroyed. And that's why they keep their countries vulnerable. That's why they weaken them from the inside. You know, for example, there's a tremendous amount of discussion today about the so-called intelligence failures in Israel that could have allowed this attack by Hamas, you know, so-called surprise attack, to be so successful from Hamas's point of view in terms of killing and kidnapping innocent Israeli citizens. Well, folks, I mean, come on. This was not an intelligence failure. This was a deliberate act to allow this attack to take place against Israel. No question about it. Mossad is extremely capable and heavily infiltrated into Hamas and Fatah and also Hezbollah and the PLO in general. You know, Mossad knows exactly what's going on. They allowed this to happen. Now, maybe they wanted it to happen because they needed a Pearl Harbor. They needed something to, you know, animate the passions of the Israeli people in order to justify more aggressive attacks against Hamas, let's say, or to justify more funding for, you know, the Israeli war machine or weapons and so on. Anytime a nation wants to focus more on war, they need to first show themselves as being the victims. And so it's very likely that the Israeli military intelligence networks allowed this to happen on purpose because they needed popular support for more funding and more wars, because they intend to engage in an escalation. And this escalation, it could be absolutely catastrophic because of Iran's involvement in this and Iran's acquisition of nuclear weapons, thanks to Barack Obama, unlocking billions of dollars in funding so that Iran can run its centrifuge operations and continue its engineering to build nukes, which undoubtedly Iran is very, very close to acquiring at this point. Perhaps Iran doesn't have nukes yet, but they're very close to acquiring them. And then Israel needs to, in their view, the Israeli military knows that they need to bomb Iran. They need to destroy Iran's nuclear capabilities. And in order to justify that, they need a Pearl Harbor type of event, an attack on Israel, so that the population supports them and you know, the media supports them and the funding is supported in order to bomb Iran. But they're going to have to link Iran to the Hamas attacks. And probably that's in process right now because Iran almost certainly funded a lot of the missiles, you know, the 5,000 plus missiles that were launched against Israel. And where did Iran get this money? Well, Joe Biden and Barack Obama, by the way, just recently from Joe Biden, but Barack Obama laundered billions of dollars in foreign currency and actually landed it in Iran on a U.S. cargo plane during the Obama administration. And then unfroze billions of dollars in funds to allow Iran to pursue nuclear weapons. And then the entire corporate media lied about that agreement, by the way. They said this agreement under Obama prohibits Iran from developing nuclear weapons. It was a complete lie. What it actually did is it funded Iran's development of nuclear weapons with no inspections from the West, no inspections whatsoever. Iran is very close to nuclear weapons. And the minute Iran gets nukes, they're going to nuke Israel. They've promised to do so, by the way. So you want to talk about how close we are to World War III, because this situation can spill over very quickly into Russia and then China, because, of course, Iran builds the drones that are purchased by Russia, many of the drones that are used to attack NATO military targets in Ukraine. And you know, Russia is one of the largest purchasers of Iranian drones, and those drones use U.S. technology that was handed to Iran by Barack Obama during the Obama years. I know this all gets convoluted, but I'm trying to connect the dots for you here. So if Israel launches a major attack on Iran, Russia is going to say, well, we have to come to the defense of Iran because Iran is one of Russia's key military weapons suppliers. And also Iran is a buyer of Russian products and some types of energy and so on, even though, of course, Iran has a lot of its own domestic energy. But Iran and Russia are trading partners. And so Russia will defend Iran against Israel. So this is how you end up in freaking end times, like, you know, Book of Revelation type of stuff, with Russia attacking Israel. This is the bridge of how that happens. This is getting biblical. All right, let's shift gears here to look at this photo that I was just sent. All right, so this is a photo taken by a United States drone at, looks like, oh, I can't tell what altitude it was taken at, but this is a compound of the Mexican drug cartels, and it looks like potentially elements of the Mexican military that is near the Frontos Island. And as you can see from the bottom of this photo, moving up, there's a red water tank. There's some soldiers, and there are, I'm looking at three vehicles right now. One of them looks like a command vehicle. Two others look like modified pickup trucks. And all three of these vehicles clearly have turrets. So there are guns, you know, machine guns, most likely, mounted in the rear or the top of these vehicles. Looks like they also have kind of a cage installed in the rear. And then moving up, you can see, let's see, more of the pickup trucks that are modified, kind of military trucks. And yeah, three more. And then looks like a command building with a pretty prominent antenna. So there's some capable comms coming out of this. That's the pink building. You notice the antenna on the left side of it. And then moving up a little bit more, looks like a, I don't know, maybe a storage building or a staging building, supplies storage, or maybe a building for some modification of vehicles of some kind. It's hard to tell because we can't see inside that building. But what we can see is that there are soldiers and that there are vehicles that are definitely ruggedized, definitely military-style vehicles with some kind of emblems in white on the sides of the vehicles, but we don't have enough resolution to read what those emblems say. I have another photo that's a little bit higher resolution, and I'm looking at that now, but yeah, can't even tell. There's no way to read that. Oh, yeah, hold on a second. I have another photo for you that is a little more zoomed in, and I want to show you this. And man, there's a Mexican child just standing out there looking at all this. Hold on a second. Let me get you this photo. So let's go to drone 2 photo, and if you zoom in on that photo, let me explain this. So now you can almost read the white words on the side of one of the turreted command vehicles, and you can clearly see that is an armored vehicle with side rails for soldiers to stand on the side. It's kind of a raiding type of vehicle with pretty beefed up bar on the front. It looks like armored. And look at that small window on the back. And then there's this girl just standing out there with a blue shirt and brown pants. Looks like it. And white tennis shoes, black hair. You see that? See that girl? And then the close-up of the pickup trucks shows the turrets in a lot more detail. You can clearly see. It's interesting. One of the vehicles, even the turret, the gun turret, is manned. And there appears to be a person in the back of that vehicle that maybe is injured or something. It's lying down. It's hard to say. But these are clearly amped up vehicles. Now, there are no tracked vehicles, and there's nothing that we would call armor, right? So there's not infantry fighting vehicles like Bradley's or anything like that. This is just kind of what we would consider in the United States to be kind of police vehicles that are beefed up, like SWAT type vehicles, which in Mexico, these are very commonly used among Mexican police and also Mexican drug cartels. But you can see, what do we have here? Six men, seven men, eight. Yeah, it looks like eight men in this photo who are clearly wearing military gear and sidearms and rifles. You can see at least one very clear rifle that's on the side of one man. And it's pretty obvious that a couple of these men are wearing helmets. So these are military style outfits. And this is what is involved in the invasion of Texas. So I just want you to understand that this invasion is underway and it is real. And there are staging areas like I'm showing you here. This compound is a very real thing. It's no joke. And so I'm glad the Texas Rangers are doing their best to try to defend Texas against these, these are invaders. Exactly what this is. All right, now let's talk about the activation of the terror cells that have already crossed into the United States. I did cover this a little bit in a related podcast here, but I'll go into a little more detail here. So I don't recall exactly when I covered this on the podcast, but some of my contacts, and I also interviewed one contact in my studio and showed him in shadow, the silhouette of one of these operators, one of my contacts on the Texas border, who also uses, by the way, the satellite phone gear, and they make heavy use of the bivy sticks for text messaging and also the satellite phones. And the satellite phone store has sponsored this contact and has sent a considerable amount of free satellite phone gear and also bivy sticks to help the Texas Rangers. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if some of those people that are in the photo that I was looking at earlier are actually carrying the bivy sticks and the satellite phones. If you want to support the satellite phone store and thank them for helping to defend Texas and defend America, by the way, find them at SAT123.com. That's SAT123.com. They have satellite phones and the bivy sticks, two-way satellite text messaging, and many other solutions that are available now. And yes, the Texas Ranger groups, at least the ones that I know, they rely heavily on the satellite phone gear because it works. As long as you can see the sky, you can send and receive messages. In fact, they use the push-to-talk satellite radios. They're like walkie-talkies. But you push the button and you talk, and then everybody else on your team gets the message, but it's happening via satellite. So it doesn't matter if the terrain is mountainous or hilly or even jungles or whatever. You can still, if you can see the sky, you can use these radios with virtually unlimited range. I mean, it's not limited by, again, local terrain. So these teams use all that. But what some of my contacts told me previously is that the human smuggling routes in the southern border of the United States have been exploited by Middle Eastern terrorists who have used them to pre-position equipment in the continental United States, CONUS, equipment that is intended to be used on an activation day in order to attack, and I've come to this conclusion, but to attack infrastructure and law enforcement across the United States. So those of you who are in law enforcement listening to this, listen up, because here's what I'm told is going to happen. So first of all, the equipment that's been coming across that is pre-positioned is, it includes RPGs, it includes full auto AKs, it includes, of course, plenty of night vision and ballistic vests and also suppressors and so on. But the RPGs, portable mortars, which I believe are 60 millimeter, and then in addition, there was a report, seems like it was about a year ago, where Homeland Security was going bonkers trying to find surface-to-air missiles that they knew had crossed the border. And I don't know what model of SAMs they were, or what designation or country of origin or anything like that. And frankly, I don't even know what happened to these SAMs. It just, no one talked about it anymore. But for a while, Homeland Security was freaking the bleep out trying to find SAMs that had been smuggled across the border into the United States. Now, maybe these SAMs disappeared into a storage facility somewhere in South Texas. Or, you know, maybe it's in Oklahoma. Who knows? But these SAMs can be used to take down commercial airliners. And all that has to happen is that these terrorists, once they're activated, just like they were activated against Israel, as we just saw, when they're activated in the United States, they just go to the storage facility, they pull out the SAMs and other gear, and then they go to town attacking infrastructure, and they can just hang out near the end of a, you know, an airport runway and just start shooting down, you know, jets as they take off or as they're coming in for landing. And as you know, commercial airliners, they don't have, you know, anti-SAM technology. They're like, fire the flares. No, they don't have flares. Fire the chaff. They don't have chaff. They are sitting ducks in the sky, especially on takeoff when they're climbing and they're using all the power they can just to try to, you know, gain altitude. There's not much they can do. SAMs are going to take them out. In addition, these terrorists have been told, at least this is my understanding, they've been ordered to attack infrastructure all on one day. So infrastructure, this is all about Operation Chaos, you know, cause chaos across the United States. The infrastructure includes comms, you know, cell towers, and also electrical substations, which power the comms and power the cities and also ultimately power, you know, first responders, by the way. So 911's going to go down, of course, but also a lot of, you know, police and fire emergency responder radio systems will go down. Some of them have backups, but those backups are time limited. You know, one more reason I have satellite phones as a backup, by the way. But they're going to take out comms, they're going to take out power substations, and then they're going to hit railways, bridges, ports, refineries, and then police stations and sheriff's offices. Why? Well, obviously taking out railways and bridges causes chaos in transportation and supply chains and fuel deliveries and so on. It just plunges America into chaos. And what the enemies of America know is that once there's a certain level of chaos reached in America, it becomes a tipping point of kind of self-induced chaos in America's cities, which are always on the verge of chaos on any given day because of the defunding of police and the insane pro-crime policies of Democrats that run these blue cities, which are going to be turned into Mad Max free-for-alls, by the way. Not a good day to find yourself stuck in Portland, or Chicago for that matter. And then the sabotage attacks on refineries are intended to disrupt the fuel supply, obviously, so that they're trying to force fuel to be rationed and controlled by the government for emergency use only, you know, for fire engines and police and ambulances and so on, and not have any fuel available for the private sector, and then basically have lockdowns and martial law, which is probably coming. So, and then attacks on the ports, of course, affect trade and the ability for America to get its imports, you know, replenishing supplies and spare parts for vehicles and parts for telecom and so on. And attacks on airports prohibit flights from coming in and unloading supplies via air. So with all of this happening on the same day, I'm calling it Activation Day. That's just a name that I came up with. I don't know what the official name is going to be, but on Activation Day, the threat, unlike in Israel, where the threat was Hamas going door to door, killing civilians in their homes, that's not really what's going to happen in America. Rather, the enemies of America are going to target infrastructure and bring down the infrastructure. And then they know that spontaneous chaos will be unleashed in the cities, like I said before. Again, thanks to the anti-police policies and the media pushing race war narratives and hatred and also destitution and the fact that people can't afford to buy food anymore in America and the dollar's collapsing and all of this stuff. So, I mean, an outside force can set off chaos, like a spark of chaos that can just wreak havoc across America. But I'm not done yet describing what has already come across the border. And I mentioned this over a year ago. There have also been suicide vests, what they called, explosive vests. I forgot the acronym that the military uses to describe these. But basically, explosive vests of two varieties. The first type is kinetic, you know, standard explosives. Like, I don't know what they use, C4 or whatever. And you're going to see explosive vests, you know, suicide bombers in America on this day. So they'll walk into, I don't know, you know, a grocery store or a stadium or wherever they can find a crowd, I guess, you know, a cafe, a restaurant, whatever, and detonate. And then this is intended to cause terror, obviously, across the United States. And it will, because everybody will be freaking out like, oh my gosh, I'm not even safe going out to eat in America, right? That's what it's intended to do, is to cause mass terror. In addition, and this will cause even more terror, in addition, there are vests that are configured for radiological dirty bomb dispersion. And I am told that these are specifically, these have been engineered in Iran by Iranian engineers who are quite adept in a lot of engineering. I mean, some of the best engineers in the world have come out of Iran. I mean, some of the best mathematicians in history have come out of Iran. I mean, they are not low IQ people. So they're very capable of engineering, you know, dirty bombs, radiological explosives. Now, it's difficult to smuggle radiological material into the United States because there are lots of course, Homeland Security, you know, radioisotope sensors and so on. But radiological material can be acquired domestically within the United States if the vest is properly engineered and smuggled across, ready to receive that material. How is radiological material acquired in the United States? Well, that's simple. Medical imaging equipment. Everybody knows that. I assume everybody knows that. Medical imaging equipment is where terrorists acquire, you know, radiological material. And it can be different elements like strontium or whatever. I don't know if they use cesium. Do they use cesium in medical imaging? I think it's more strontium and things like that, but whatever. These vests, radiological vests, the dirty bomb suicide vests, they do not have to be detonated in order to be, quote, effective. They don't have to be detonated in an actual crowd. The detonation locations of those are chosen more for dispersion and the radiological contamination of the immediate area around the explosive, nullifying the function of that section of a city or, let's say, an airport. So if some terrorist were to walk into, I don't know, let's say the Denver airport, which is a pretty major hub, or let's say Atlanta airport, major hub for a lot of airlines, right? And if they were to set off a radiological dirty bomb in the Atlanta airport, it would shut down the entire airport for quite a long time. I mean, I don't know how many days or weeks. I guess it just depends on what the hazmat teams decide and whether they think they can contain the radiological fallout from that. But it's going to shut down an airport hub and cause chaos across America. Now, imagine if somebody does this on the streets of New York City or something like Wall Street, and shuts down this city. Or let's say that like a port, a major shipping port in California, just sets it off, and then boom, the port, the whole port has to be shut down. Suddenly you can't do imports and exports anymore, or it might have to shut down, you know, Lower Manhattan Island or something. It's depending on where they set this off, they can nullify the functions of that area. Even if they don't kill any other people immediately, the radiological contamination will cause that area to be shut down. So it's not about causing fatalities of people. It's about disrupting the economic activity that allows the United States to function. Now, the reason that these vests have to be engineered by very capable people is because, of course, there has to be specific placement of the kinetic charges underneath the radiological material so that there is maximum. So, in other words, the radiological material is on the outside, so there's maximum kinetic projection and atomization of the radiological material so that it becomes a very, very fine dust that is projected outward and then gets carried in the wind or the breeze or wherever they are. That's what, you know, radiological suicide vests are engineered to try to achieve. And by the way, the minute something like that happens, you won't be able to find a vial of iodine anywhere in the country. They'll be selling them on eBay for $5,000, you know, a bottle, which is crazy because, you know, iodine, it doesn't make you bulletproof against, you know, radioisotopes from other elements. But a lot of people don't know that. So they're going to panic buy iodine because they think, well, iodine makes me, you know, immune to radiation. No, it doesn't. Iodine is stable isotopes of iodine. Only they occupy the receptor sites on your thyroid so that your thyroid doesn't take up iodine, what is it, 131, which is part of the fallout from a nuclear attack. Well, it's very unlikely that a dirty bomb will contain iodine 131. Why would it? See, I don't know how much I want to go into here, but iodine 131 is actually created. That isotope is created in a nuclear explosion, as are many other isotopes. But in a dirty bomb, using kinetic disbursement of radiological material, you're not actually, there's not a nuclear explosion, understand? So you're not having fusion or fission, you're not generating new elements in a dirty bomb vest, okay? All you're doing is dispersing radiological elements that already exist, that are already on the vest, that are worn by the suicide person, and the total radiological load of that is very, very small compared to a nuclear weapon. Very small. In fact, again, a nuclear suicide vest is not really that much of a threat to any immediate death of people who are outside the immediate blast radius, but it's more of the shutting down of a contaminated area that has low level of radiation and thus is unsafe to inhabit, unsafe to work there, unsafe to operate the airport, unsafe to, you know, to run the port or whatever. That's what dirty bomb vests are designed to do. But as a result, again, everybody's going to run out and buy iodine 131, even though it's useless against a radiological suicide vest, but whatever. I'll probably put out a podcast saying, hey, stop buying iodine to try to protect yourself against strontium 91 or whatever. I don't know what the radioisotopes are of strontium. I think it's 91. Okay, I had to look that up. Looks like it's strontium 90. So it's off by one. Okay. Okay, I'm looking this up on Wikipedia. Don't give any money to Wikipedia, by the way. Wikipedia is a total CIA front. Wikipedia is complete disinformation when it comes to politics or people or medicine or vaccines or history or Trump or anything like that. But it's good for looking up radioisotopes. So anyway, it says 90. But here's the thing. Okay, most people, including most Americans, do not understand radiation. They don't get it at all. They don't understand what's a half-life, what's a radioisotope. They don't understand, you know, what are the risks of exposure to different types of radiation and so on. So if there's even a relatively mild, let's see if there is such a thing, a mild let's say, not a major detonation of a radioactive, suicide vest somewhere in America, even if it's not really very dangerous, it's going to freak everybody out because of the scary unknown factor. Everybody's going to freak out. I mean, if they blow something up in New York City, people in Los Angeles are going to freak out and think that they're all being poisoned in LA, which is nonsense, because the dispersion of the radioisotopes in New York City couldn't possibly, I mean, it wouldn't even be a threat to people in New Jersey, even if the wind were blowing that way. I mean, but people don't know how radiation works and what's dangerous and what's not dangerous, and so they flip out. It's funny because these same people will go in for a, you know, medical imaging CAT scan, which subjects them to like 600 chest x-rays, and they'll think that's totally fine, completely fine, that's all good. They'll even use, they'll go into like an MRI and they'll be injected with toxic heavy metals like gadolinium that practically kill them, because it's an imaging contrast dye that contains this heavy element. And they're like, oh, that's totally okay. Go ahead and inject me with mass poison. They think that's fine, but then they'll freak out over something that happens, you know, thousands of miles away that's no threat to them whatsoever. But then again, that's the psyche of the uneducated American consumer who is mathematically illiterate thanks to our failed public school system, and they have no idea how anything works. You know, they don't understand geopolitics, economics, math, physics, I mean, God forbid, chemistry, anything. So they're all just freaking out, which is the intended effect on the part of the terrorists. They know that it doesn't take much to freak out typical Americans, because Americans are not well-educated. Well, you know, frankly, nor are Israelis or Europeans or Canadians or most of anybody not well-educated on the reality of things. And so it's kind of easy for a terrorist organization to cause terror and totally freak people out over something that they shouldn't be freaked out about. I mean, look at COVID. They basically just rebranded the flu season, called it COVID, and terrorized everybody to line up and get injected with an actual biological weapon that's killing them. I mean, there's an example right there, but that was terrorism by the U.S. government, or terrorism by the Israeli government against its own people. And that killed, like I said earlier, far more people than any explosive vest from any terrorist that might make it into the United States. But the upshot of all of this, I'm going to wrap this up. The upshot is, number one, I'm not saying that you should be terrified at all about explosive vests, you know, being set off in your local grocery store, or that you should freak out about, you know, radioisotope explosive vests. No, dirty bombs. No. What I'm saying is be ready for disruptions of infrastructure. And understand that America is being invaded, and that we've got to build the wall, we've got to defend the border, we've got to stop illegal immigration. That's clear to anybody paying attention. Heck, Alejandro Mayorkas even announced that just the other day and then had to backtrack on it because of all the pushback from Democrats. He was like, there's an urgent need to build a wall. And then they said, how dare you say wall? And he said, oh, I didn't mean build a wall. I said a horse stall. Yeah, it was to build a horse stall. That's what I said, you know. He's like backtracking like a pathetic traitor, human smuggler that he is. He's funding all the invasion staging camps in Panama, you know, Darien Gap, like Lajas Blancas and a bunch of those, right? San Vicente. He's funding all that stuff. But what we've got to be ready for is for the power grid to go down for some period of time. Major supply chain disruptions. Major fuel disruptions, major transportation disruptions, major disruptions in the delivery of food, these kinds of things. That's what I'm talking about. So I don't want you to sit in your home terrified, like shaking, and have an AR-15 in your hands pointed at your front door, like waiting for Mexican drug cartels to show up. No, that's not a good use of your time, and it's not a high risk. The highest risk is that you're going to have a lights out scenario. So you're going to lose your air conditioning or your heat. You're going to lose your refrigeration. You're going to lose your cell towers. You're going to lose your comms. You know, you're going to lose your internet access. And then grocery stores won't function, right? On and on and on. Gas stations won't function. This is the risk, the really practical risk of how most Americans are going to be impacted by this. Disruptions. And so it gets down to a lot of the things that I've taught for many years, which is, you know, serious preparedness. How much fuel do you have? And by the way, what's your fuel choice? I've talked about this many times. You need to be running diesel. Why? Diesel's safer to store, stores longer, and actually diesel contains more energy than gasoline per liter, by the way, in case you didn't know. If you have a 20-gallon tank of diesel versus a 20-gallon tank of gasoline, the diesel tank will get you a lot more miles than the gasoline tank, you know, the weight of the vehicle being the same. Diesel's got more energy in it. So, you know, 1,000 gallons of diesel has a lot more energy than 1,000 gallons of gasoline. And I wouldn't want to store 1,000 gallons of gasoline because things could go horribly wrong with static electricity and so on. And, you know, spills and such. And what's your backup food situation? You know, how much food storage do you have? Can you get by for 30 days, 90 days? And if you don't have backup food, you know, what are you waiting for? Go to my store, healthrangerstore.com. Get yourself some backup food supplies. We've got, you know, freeze-dried fruits that are missing from most people's storage. Ours are all USDA certified organic, laboratory tested in my mass spec lab. And I just posted a video of my heavy metals auto sampler last week, the ICP-MS auto sampler system. Kind of cool if you're interested in that. But we do all the lab testing for glyphosate and heavy metals, and also microbiology, E. coli, salmonella, and so on. And we bring you the cleanest organic food for long-term storage in number 10 cans. We've got Ranger buckets, mini buckets, mega buckets, all kinds of things. You can check all that out at healthrangerstore.com. And what are you doing for backup comms? You know, I mentioned satellite phone store, sat123.com. Or make sure you have, get yourself some Baofeng radios, you know, for local communications. Get yourself, you know, just emergency radio to tune in. Maybe you're a hammer. You know, get your ham license. You know, do shortwave radios. I mean, get into comms as much as you can because you're going to need that in order to communicate. And then what are you doing for electricity? I mean, I have figured out the backup strategy for electricity. I've figured it out. I've shared it with my audience several times. I'll just mention it here again. It's very simple. You get yourself a tractor with a PTO. You can get small ones. You can get a little 20 horsepower tractor if you want. And then you buy a PTO generator that plugs into the PTO of the tractor. And the brand that I have used and that I recommend and that absolutely works is called Winco, W-I-N-C-O. You get a little Winco generator, which is very inexpensive compared to a standalone generator. And you can plug that Winco generator into the back of your tractor and use your tractor's engine, which should be diesel, of course, to generate electricity. You can get small generators like 15 kilowatts. You can get bigger ones like 50 kilowatts. And essentially, as long as you feed your tractor diesel, you have energy. There's your solution. You store diesel, you get a tractor, you get a generator, you've got energy. And by the way, the math on that is for every 2 horsepower of the PTO, you can generate 1 kilowatt of electricity from a PTO generator. Understand? So if you have a 30 horsepower tractor, you can generate 15 kilowatts of power, which is more than enough for most households most of the time, because you're not going to be running, you know, clothes dryers and electric stoves and air conditioning all at the same time, and blenders and hair dryers, or I already mentioned that, curling irons, whatever. That's not going to happen. You're going to be living a little bit more of a sparse type of existence, trust me. You're going to want to boil water with either natural gas or some kind of a, like a backyard rocket stove where you're just burning, you know, pine cones and sticks to boil water. You don't want to use electricity to boil water. You'll spend a fortune in diesel if you're trying to do it with electricity. Anyway, through this method, you can convert diesel into electricity through the tractor and the PTO. It's the best system. You can also, you can use solar panels and you can use solar generators, and those are great too. And in fact, our sponsor, the Satellite Phone Store, they've got those at BeReady123.com, come to think of it. just like it sounds, BeReady123.com. And you get the solar panels, charges the lithium ion solar generator system, which has an onboard inverter plus charge controllers. And then that can power certain things. It's mostly good for keeping laptops charged up or mobile devices or maybe little battery chargers for flashlights so you can keep your night vision gear up and running, things like that. But you're not going to run your house on one of those. And an investment in an off-grid solar system for a house is crazy. It's over $100,000 to truly have a fully off-grid system. I'm not talking about a grid tie system. I'm talking about completely off the grid and actually have power to run air conditioning and freezers and clothes dryers and everything. You're talking $100,000 plus, which is crazy. Whereas if you go with my tractor approach, you know, a little tractor plus a PTO generator and some diesel storage, you can do it for a lot less, and you end up with a tractor with a bucket on the front of it. You can move dirt around, you can do your gardening, and you can move soil and compost and whatever else. You know, it's a food generating machine if you know how to use it correctly. So anyway, that's what that's all about. And then on top of that, make sure you've got your AR-15 and your backup. Make sure you've got your Glock and your backup. Make sure you've got your, you know, your spare mags and plenty of ammo. And most importantly, your skills. Are you up to speed? When was the last time you went shooting? When was the last time you cleaned your rifle or lubricated your Glock or whatever? Get up to speed on this stuff. Time's running out. I actually have to remind myself of that too. I've got a couple of rifles I need to put some rounds through and just sight in the optics because I got I'm going to brag a little bit, but I just got one of these 1.5 to 6X DR Spectre optics for a 308 rifle. Man, the DR Spectres are just outstanding. They're made by Raytheon, by the way. It's like military grade optics. They have excellent light transmission, pretty good for low light shooting. And the ballistic drop reticles are just right on the money. I was with a 7.62 by 51. I was out there just pumping them out 400, 500 yards right on the money with that optic. And that wasn't even stretching it out. You know, you can push those 600, 800 yards, no problem. Oh, and don't forget about your water supplies. Also, I forgot to mention that the water system is highly susceptible to a terrorist attacks. It's virtually unprotected, as is much of the electrical infrastructure across America. And so you're going to need backup water sources and also, of course, water filters, the gravity filters. And, you know, isn't that interesting how the EPA recently attacked Big Berkey and tried to prevent them from manufacturing and selling their gravity water filters, you know, to try to leave Americans helpless? Isn't that interesting? What timing, right? But set up some rainwater collection if you've got some decent rainfall in your area. It is a reliable source in many areas, and it can't be messed with by terrorists. You know, a terrorist can put something in the municipal water supply, kind of a centrally controlled water system. Well, if you have your own rainwater system, they can't mess with it. Even if they're doing chemtrails, rainwater collection systems usually rinse out the first X number of gallons and discard that before they start to collect. So the air gets washed by the first, fraction of an inch of rainfall. Anyway, I'm not going to go into everything about rainwater collection right here, but just make sure you're covered in all the areas that matter. Food, water, shelter, all of it. Now, finally, let me mention, I've got a lot more free resources for you to download in the form of audiobooks that I've recorded over the years. And you can find all these at the following URL, audiobooks.naturalnews.com. Just type it in like it sounds in your browser, audiobooks.naturalnews.com, no spaces. And there you're going to find free downloads, including PDFs and MP3 audio files of my books, including Resilient Prepping, which is high-tech, low-tech, and no-tech solutions for surviving the collapse. I've also got the Global Reset Survival Guide, which is very informative. I've got Battlefield America 2022 through 2024 with Steve Quayle. I've got Ghost World and Survival Nutrition and The Contagious Mind, which is not about prepping. But all those books are free. So check those out, download what you want, get the files locally. You can listen to them anytime on any device. They're MP3 files. Audiobooks.naturalnews.com. Very simple. And that's it for today. I'm sure we'll have a lot more information for you tomorrow. The situation is happening. You know, things are happening very quickly. Let me give you, there's a map URL I wanted to give you here. Where is it? Okay, go to liveuamap.com. And let me see what that looks like. If you go to liveuamap.com, which is a Western created map, it shows you what's happening in real time. And it currently covers Ukraine. And then up top, you can click on Israel, Palestine, and it will zoom in to Israel. And you can see the actual combat. You can see the bombs. You can see the deaths. You can, you know, I mean, you can zoom in and you can see what's happening in near real time. And then there's also a map about the USA, and there's a map about Syria. The USA map is basically just a bunch of people getting shot and stabbed and killed in Chicago and LA and all the Democrat cities of Philadelphia and Baltimore. That's the USA map. It's like not surprising. But again, liveuamap.com. Check it out. Okay, folks, get yourself ready. It's going to get wild. I mean, here we are. Biblical, as one of my sources said, it's going to get biblical. All right, we'll talk to you again tomorrow. Be safe. Get prepared. Take care.